way is forward. Those first few months that Ted and I talked, all I could focus on was the creator orientation itself. I also spent quite a bit of time exploring what I most wanted to contribute to others. Later, we can talk more about discerning our life's meaning and purpose. But first, I want Ted to finish outlining the creator orientation. Ted?
Thanks, Sophia. I really like hearing your story, especially what's happened for you in the last couple of years. It makes my heart sing. David, this singing of the heart is the quality of the inner state of the creator orientation. As you focus on your envisioned outcomes, you connect with forgotten or seldom felt emotions, passion, love, a sense of your heart's desire. Ted wrote passion in the center of the second circle in the journal. He said, "When you focus on those things in your life that hold meaning and purpose, your passion just naturally flows."
Can you remember a time in your life when passion, desire, or love just naturally arose? Sophia asked.
I thought for a moment.
Well, sure, I said. Before my wife and I were married, when we were dating, we spent a lot of time just hanging out together. Back then, I only had to look at her, and those feelings just began washing over me.
Said Ted. You may not want to hear this, David, but that feeling may actually be more related to your experience in the victim orientation than to what we're after here. I would bet the feeling you identified then as love were also the result of you having found your next rescuer. Do you see how that might be possible? I frowned. I felt a tug at the pit of my stomach.
Yeah, I guess so. But being in a relationship is what I really wanted. Sophia added, David, Ted's making an important point. Of course you wanted a relationship. People naturally seek out intimate relationships. But wanting a relationship to chase away your loneliness is very different from consciously envisioning the qualities and characteristics of the kind of person with whom you want to create a partnership. In my own case, as I approached dating from the creator orientation, after many, many months of healing after my divorce, I became much more discerning. I spent a lot of time clarifying, with the help of a coach and mentor, the qualities and characteristics of the kind of person I wanted to be in a committed relationship with. When feelings of love and passion began to emerge with my new partner, Jake, I knew those feelings had come up not because Jake was the right partner, but because I was consciously choosing to see in him the qualities I most wanted in a partner. So, David, Sophia continued, let me ask again. Can you think of a time in which passion or desire arose naturally, aside from the early stages of a relationship? Take a few minutes and look back over your life. I remembered my first job out of college. Right after I finished college, I got a really exciting job helping to build a public access cable television studio and operation. We built the whole thing with our own hands. I trained volunteers how to use video equipment and edit programs. We had in-studio programs to educate and reach out to the public. We taped area events, and we all felt that we were helping to build real community. We won national awards for our efforts. I would wake up every morning eager to get to work to begin the day's new creations. It didn't pay much, but it was one of the most fun and exciting jobs I've ever had. Sophia smiled and said, if you could only see your eyes right now, David, your lights are on and burning brightly. That's how passion looks and feels in the creator orientation.
When you tap that passion to create the outcomes that matter to you, it provides powerful energy to take action toward your heart's desires, said Ted. The behavior that moves you in that direction is taking baby steps. Taking a baby step means doing the next logical thing in front of you, making a phone call, having a conversation, or gathering information. Each step you take either moves you closer to your vision or helps you clarify the final form of your desired outcome. Ted wrote baby steps in the last circle. It is the baby steps you take, the everyday things you do, that eventually lead to the manifestation of your outcome.
That makes sense, I said. I did that same thing again and again when I worked in the cable television studio. I used to love the editing process. We'd usually record more than twice the amount of footage we would need for a final videotape. And then I'd sit in the editing room for hours putting the program together one scene at a time. Like a video jigsaw puzzle. I never thought of calling it baby steps, but that is definitely the process we were using to produce TV programs. Three big differences. Whether you're creating a television program, building a house, or beginning a new relationship, the basic process is the same, Sophia said. The creator orientation is a powerful and simple, although not always easy, way to think and act. It has become very important to me, thanks to Ted.
You're welcome, Sophia, Ted smiled. There is definitely a different air about you since you've adopted the creator orientation. I can assure you, David, that people who know you will soon begin to notice a different air about you, too, if you commit to the creator orientation as your primary stance in life.
Ted's hinting at the three things that make the difference between the victim and the creator orientation, Sophia added, chuckling. Ted, stop being a goofball and tell David what AIR stands for.
Ted winked at me. His smile activated little creases in his face, and his eyes glistened. AIR stands for three big differences between the victim and creator stances. The first is where you place your attention. As the victim, your focus is on what you don't want. You think, speak, and act on the problems in your life. As creator, you place your attention first and foremost on what you do want, your envisioned outcome. The second difference is your intention. In the victim orientation, your intention is to get rid of or away from your problems. In the creator orientation, your intention is to bring into being or manifest the outcomes you envision. The third big difference is the results you produce. The results of the victim orientation are temporary and reactive. With the creator orientation, though, you're much more likely to produce satisfying, sustainable results over time. With each baby step you take from the creator stance, you come closer to, or get clearer about, your heart's desires. Sophia chimed in.
Don't think that Ted's saying the creator orientation is all sweetness and light, or that there's no such thing as a problem. I can tell you from experience that living from the creator orientation is actually more challenging. In the victim orientation, I didn't have to exercise conscious choice. I just reacted to my circumstances. The creator orientation requires considering and choosing my response to everything that happens, taking many, many baby steps that eventually lead to manifesting my envisioned outcome. And in the process, problems certainly do come up, Ted continued.
In the creator orientation, however, you cultivate the capacity to choose which problems get your attention. You select problems that will best serve your outcomes, and those are the only problems you actively work to solve. It's important to know that even when you adopt the creator orientation, you'll still experience anxiety at times. As Sophia said so well, the creator orientation is not all sweetness and light. Anxiety and fear are a natural and normal part of our experience. Creators, however, learn how to move forward in their lives with courage in the face of fear and anxiety. And there are no guarantees. Often you won't know whether your heart's desires are attainable until after you've put in a great deal of time, effort, and experimentation to make your envisioned outcome a reality. Sophia added,
after Dan and I had been apart for a while, I eventually chose to be open to another intimate relationship. As I began dating, exploring what I wanted in a relationship, I came up against a lot of fear and anxiety. Sometimes I thought the conscious, co-creative bond I was hoping for was just a romantic fantasy. I dated a number of men before I met Jake. Each person I met, and each experience I had while I was dating, helped me get clearer about the kind of relationship I wanted.
A flock of pelicans flew along the shoreline just a few feet above the surf. As I followed their flight, I wondered how long it would be before I was willing and ready to be open to a new relationship. I shuddered at the thought.
I also felt a twinge of sadness as I realized I was much more certain about what I didn't want in my life than I was about what I wanted to create. Where to begin? My mind was abuzz with questions. I buried my hands in my pockets and tried to make sense of it all.
I think I understand the idea of baby steps and taking the creating process one step at a time, I said. But how do you figure out which steps to take? How do you know where to start? Where do I place my focus?
Sophia gave my arm a gentle squeeze. I remember so well what a jumble of questions came up when I saw how different it might be to take the creator approach to my life. About that time, I came across a wonderful passage from a letter that the great poet Rilke wrote to a younger poet he had taken under his wing.
Sophia reached into her beach bag and pulled out a journal, which appeared to be well-worn.
She opened the journal and looked for a particular page. This is what Rilke said. Be patient toward all that is unsolved in your heart, and try to love the questions themselves like locked rooms, and like books that are written in a very foreign tongue. Do not now seek the answers, which cannot be given you because you would not be able to live them. And the point is to live everything. Live the questions now. Perhaps you will then gradually, without noticing it, live along some distant day into the answer. A small sailboat bobbed out on the waves, its bright sails billowing with the sea breeze, drifting gently, serenely, on the water. Give yourself plenty of time in coming to the answers for yourself, Sophia said warmly. It takes time, and a lot of introspection and soul-searching to get clear about what you really want to manifest in your life. People will begin to show up, who will help you focus and sharpen your envisioned outcomes. In fact, Ted invited me to meet you so I could offer my support as you learn to live in the creator orientation. Others helped me to learn, and I'd be glad to help you if you want my support. As I took in Sophia's kind offer, I looked out at the ocean to mark the sailboat's progress. The wind was up, and the boat's sails were stretched tight and full. I wondered if such a small craft could sustain the pressure of so much force and speed. The crew scrambled about on deck, adjusting the rigging. I just hoped they knew what they were doing. Chapter 7. Dynamic Tension. David, there's another aspect of the creator life stance that I know Ted will want to tell you about, Sophia remarked. It's the key to creating the outcomes you'll be envisioning. Since I learned about this tool, I use it to approach almost everything in my life.
There's a very simple way to understand and harness the process of creating, said Ted. The tool Sophia's talking about is dynamic tension. The way you create any outcome in your life is to hold the vision of your deepest desires. At the same time, though, you must honestly and accurately assess your current situation and how it relates to your greater vision. By doing this, you engage a tension between what is and what can be. This tension is the primary creative force behind the manifestation of any outcome. It's as natural and as powerful as the force of gravity. Sophia removed the band from her wrist and handed it to Ted with a smile. Ted turned and gave it to me. He said, "This will help you get a grip on the principle I'm talking about. Take the band and loop it around the index and middle fingers on each hand. Now stretch the band. Your right hand represents your vision, and your left hand, your current situation. How does that feel, David?"
"It's tight," I reported. "I can feel the tension between my hands."
"That's right. You've engaged the tension between your vision in your right hand and your current situation in your left hand. Now, if that band could speak, what do you think it would say it wants to do right now?"
"It wants to relax. It wants the tension to go away."
"Right. So here's the principle. All tension seeks to be resolved. It's not only a physical reality, as you can feel as you stretch the band. It's also a psychological principle. Human beings seek to resolve such tension all the time. If I say, 'Knock, knock,' what do you want to say in response?"
"Who's there?" We all laughed.
"There's an example of resolving the tension," said Ted. "Someone says, 'Knock, knock,' and there's a tension, an expectation. You know to resolve that tension by responding, 'Who's there?' It may be a silly example, but the fact that people dislike tension and will take action to resolve it, whether consciously or unconsciously, is a powerful principle once you understand it and put it to use. In the case of dynamic tension, you can resolve the tension in either direction. You can let go of your vision, your right hand, and snap back toward your current reality. Or you can move from your current situation, your left hand, toward your vision. Creators resolve the tension by taking baby steps to move from current reality toward their vision. When you do this, you tap into a fundamental and powerful creative principle that's hardwired into the universe.
This one simple idea has had a tremendous impact on the way I approach every part of my life, Sophia added. When I decide what I want to create, it's absolutely necessary to give myself permission to dream big. not to limit my vision to what I think or know to be possible.
But wait a minute, I said. What if what I want to create or manifest in my life is, in fact, impossible? Don't you need to be realistic in choosing what you want to create? Sophia was silent for a moment. We watched as a crab burrowed into the sand a little way up the beach.
That's an important question, one that must be considered carefully. To limit yourself to only what you know or think is possible can greatly reduce your creativity. Allow yourself to dream, David. For instance, right now, ask yourself what you would do if you knew you couldn't fail. What would you want, have, do, or become if absolutely anything were possible?
I thought for a minute and decided to play with Sophia a bit. I'd love to be a 7-foot center playing professional basketball, I exclaimed. But that's not likely, given the fact that I'm a middle-aged guy well short of 6 feet tall. Sophia chuckled and took the bait.
Okay, let's stay with that, David. If that's really what you want, the key is to not let go of the vision. Instead, ask yourself how you can get to the closest expression of that vision, given the reality that you will never be a 7-foot basketball player. So, what could you do given an accurate assessment of your current reality? She asked. You might join a men's basketball league and play with that vision in your mind as a fantasy expression of your desire. Maybe you could volunteer to coach kids who have the potential of growing to a greater height and to develop the agility and skills necessary to play basketball professionally. Then, who knows? 15 years down the road, you might be sitting on a Sunday afternoon at a pro basketball game, watching a 7-foot center out on the floor who used to be one of the kids you coached in the Parks and Recreation League. In that case, you could say that there was a part of you that did, in fact, become a 7-foot center.
Sophia went on.
Each of the baby steps you take to move in the direction of your dream helps you get clearer about the form that dream may take. While the reality is that you will never be 7 feet tall or play professional basketball, by holding your vision and paying attention to current reality, you can create a way to express that vision in a different form.
Sophia had made her point. All I could do was smile and nod.
Got it.
Dealing with anxiety.
Sophia gave a great example of how dynamic tension works, or can work, said Ted. There's another aspect of dynamic tension, though. Being aware of it will allow you to consciously and effectively draw on dynamic tension to create your desired outcomes. Remember what we said a few minutes ago about how the creator orientation is not all sweetness and light?
Right, I said. It also takes a lot of hard work.
Ted nodded. It's important to remember that anxiety, and even fear, are part of the human experience, and that these unpleasant emotional states very often raise their heads when we begin working creatively with dynamic tension. It helps to be aware that anxiety is part of the experience of manifesting. Anxiety has positive aspects, such as excitement and exhilaration, but it can also arise in ways that limit your effectiveness. In other words, you can have your anxiety, but don't let your anxiety have you.
It took me a while to really understand the distinction between my own feelings of anxiety and the sense of dynamic tension, the creative force in the creator orientation, Sophia added. I have a friend who really helped me understand the difference. He used to teach skydiving in the Air Force. One evening, I was sharing the principle of dynamic tension with him, and he pointed out that the exhilaration he felt jumping out of a plane was certainly not the same thing as gravity, the force that pulled him toward the earth as he fell. The force of gravity, he told me, contributed to his feeling of exhilaration. But exhilaration and gravity are not the same. Likewise, the force of dynamic tension is not the same as the feeling of anxiety that often comes up when we tap into it.
I pondered that for a moment. I understood the distinction, but it wasn't clear to me why it was so important. Living and working in the creator orientation is a conscious process. Anxiety is like a mischievous monkey chattering its way into your thoughts. If you don't stay aware of its antics, it can quite easily propel you into the victim orientation, Ted said.
How?
I asked. Do you remember the inner state of the victim orientation that I drew in the sand yesterday?
It was anxiety, I recalled.
Yes, said Ted. And if you allow anxiety to pull you into reacting, you'll limit the effectiveness that dynamic tension offers you as you attempt to create an outcome. So,
David, create the tension between your two hands with the band again. Now, if you confuse anxiety with the tension between your vision, your right hand, and your current reality, your left hand, you'll tend to react in order to release the tension, hoping it will get rid of the anxiety. Doing this may make you feel better, but it will not help you create the results you want. So what is one thing you could do right now to release the tension? I looked at my hands. Probably the easiest thing to do would be to let go of my vision. I moved my right hand toward my left. Absolutely. The easiest thing would be to compromise your vision. You could let go of or reduce your vision. You might convince yourself that what you want to create is unrealistic or impossible, or that you're not worthy of such a lofty dream. Then you would settle for something less than your heart's true desires. The reality, though, is that you can't invest your soul in a compromise. Seeing my wrinkled brow, Sophia added, "Let me give you an example. About a year ago, I decided to change jobs, to move into a profession in which I could use Ted's principles in my work. I was working as a manager in the loan processing department of a bank, and I had really come to dread going to work, not to mention dealing with my difficult boss. I longed for a more fulfilling job, but couldn't afford to leave without having a new job to take its place, so I took the first offer that came along. I went to work as a trainer for another company. I thought that compromise was as close as I was going to be able to get to what I really wanted. It ended up being the wrong move. Now I realize that I settled for something much less than my envisioned outcome." "So what did you do?" I asked.
"Well, I'm still working on resolving it. I'm still in that job and giving it my best effort. At the same time, I'm working with a coach to clarify my vision of what I want my work to be. I'm giving myself the time to get really clear before I make any more changes."
Ted nodded. "So you could compromise your vision to resolve the tension and get rid of the anxiety you might feel. It's the easiest, most immediate, and most common reaction. The other way is actually much more subtle. It has to do with how you assess your current reality. It's all too easy not to tell the truth about your current reality, to deny, minimize, or rationalize it away. There are many ways to shade the truth or put a certain spin on the current situation by telling yourself it's not as bad or as good as it seems." Sophia chuckled softly.
My current job is actually the result of both those ways of reacting. Not only did I settle for something less than what I wanted, but when I was interviewed for the training position, I told myself I could probably create a coaching program once I got into the organization. I even dismissed the recruiter's comment that they considered coaching to be a function of the employee relations department rather than the training group.
One of the keys to tapping the power of dynamic tension is to tell yourself the truth about your current reality, said Ted. This is often the most challenging aspect of the process of manifesting an outcome, because people tend to see reality as either rosier or gloomier than it actually is. Telling the truth in this sense means being objective and detached enough to see reality as it is without labeling it as either good or bad.
"It's not as easy as it sounds," Sophia added. "I have a quote on my bulletin board at work to remind me of this principle. I look at it every day. The friend who gave it to me said it was from a former corporate executive. It says, 'What determines your destiny is not the hand you are dealt, but how you play the hand. And the way to play the hand is to see reality for what it is and to act accordingly.' That is the challenge, to see reality for what it is."
Ted said, "Paying attention to what is true at every point along the way, while you continue to hold your vision, lets you make realistic decisions about which baby steps you will take to move yourself closer to your goal. As you move forward, you may resolve the tension by changing your situation, by modifying your vision as you get clearer about its final form, or by finding an entirely new path that will lead to your destination. At the same time, David, it's important to be realistic about what forward progress looks like. The way of creating is not a smooth and continuous upward curve of achievement. Some of the steps you take may end up being detours or out-and-out mistakes. By staying focused on your vision, though, you'll find even those steps useful in the creating process. There's no such thing as a wasted baby step. Every step will either take you closer to or further away from what you intend to create, and that process will give you priceless information to spur you onward. If you continue applying these principles, I guarantee that you will achieve remarkable and often unpredictable results throughout your life.
Ted is right. The creator way of being can be quite magical, Sophia mused. Baby steps help us move in time from our current reality toward a vision. Many times a baby step is just that, an incremental act that serves your vision. But there are other times.
Her voice trailed off, and I noticed her eyes were moist.
Other times, she continued, the most amazing things happen. I call them the twin sisters, synchronicity and serendipity. It's when unpredictable, spontaneously helpful events appear to just happen. Something I need shows up right when I need it. I open a magazine or a book to just the right page that answers a burning question, or that inspires me to take a more effective approach,
or the right person comes into my life at just the right time. An involuntary shiver of affirmation coursed up my spine. I looked down at the creator orientation Ted had drawn in my journal. I looked out at the expanse of the sea, the blue waves rolling out far beyond my line of vision. I turned to Ted and Sophia, and they both smiled.
You mean like these last 2 days? I said.
Sophia nodded.
It's no accident that you've come to this place and this conversation at this time in your life. Your choice to contemplate, to step into a new life stance and a new way of being, open the door for Ted and me to meet you. Whether or not we continue to work together after today, I'm confident that we'll always be friends on the path.
Yes, friends on the path, smiled Ted. And David, as you live your life from the creator orientation, you'll discover that your new relationships take on a much different quality than you experienced in the victim orientation. You now have the potential to leave the dreaded drama triangle behind in all your relationships, professional and personal. You can now step into a new framework, the empowerment dynamic.
Chapter 8, The Empowerment Dynamic. The day was vibrant and the sound of life reverberated everywhere. Gulls circled above the surf, getting into spats over which spoils belonged in whose beak. Families and couples took their places all along the beach, while a few people walked solo and were, like me, absorbed in their thoughts. I couldn't stop thinking about this new life orientation, how I was acquiring the tools to create a more fulfilling life. I wondered what all of it might mean in the future. Whatever change lay ahead, I felt ready. At that moment, I felt someone nearby and looked over my shoulder. Ted had stood up from his perch on the rock and motioned ahead of us.
Let's walk back toward the shoreline, he said. There's something else I want to draw on the sand for you.
The three of us strolled along the shore, Ted and me on either side of Sophia, who linked her arms in ours. It felt as though we were three old friends, surprisingly natural. In a few moments we stopped. The area seemed relatively free of sunbathers. Ted drew another triangle with the tip of his walking stick.
The creator orientation challenges every assumption and attitude that the victim orientation holds to be true, said Ted. A creator puts problems in their rightful place, causing fear to fade and loosen its grip. In its place, passion, desire, even love become your primary motivation. Though fear still comes up from time to time, the creator stance increases your capacity to deal with anxiety in ways that actually enhance your creativity. Rather than constantly reacting to your circumstances, the victim's way, you begin creating your experience, which means, of course, that you create a new set of relationships as well. These new relationships are the powerful antidote to the victim, persecutor, and rescuer roles of the dreaded drama triangle. By assuming the creator orientation, you enter a whole new set of dynamics that support rather than sabotage your happiness. It's called the empowerment dynamic. My nickname, Ted, comes from the empowerment dynamic.
So Ted's not your real name? I asked.
It's my real name now, Ted chuckled. I don't mind sharing initials with the empowerment dynamic.
Sophia touched Ted's arm. David, she turned to me.
Before Ted describes this new triangle of relationships, I want to be sure of something. Do you know what an antidote is?
Isn't it a cure for a disease or an illness? Something like that?
Close, Sophia smiled. It's a remedy that counteracts the effects of a poison. Ted, the empowerment dynamic, counteracts the poison of DDT, the dreaded drama triangle. Ted is the antidote for DDT, Ted explained.
Each of the roles in Ted is also an antidote for its counterpart in the DDT. Creator is the antidote for the victim role. The antidote for the persecutor role is Challenger. I'll say more about that in a minute. And in the empowerment dynamic, support comes not from a rescuer, but from a coach.
Ted knelt down and with his finger wrote the letters CR at the top of the new triangle. The creator role.
The central role in the empowerment dynamic is creator, explained Ted. Actually, all three roles share creator characteristics, just as all three roles in the DDT are victim-oriented. You could think of creator as the light and victim as shadow. While the victim is powerless, a creator claims and taps into his or her personal power in order to choose a response to life circumstances. Therein lies a creator's power to manifest a desired outcome. A creator is vision-focused and passion-motivated. To really live into your creator self, you'll have to do the inner work necessary to find your own sense of purpose and passion, whatever touches your heart and holds meaning for you.
Adopting a creator stance begins simply by making a choice. You decide and declare that in your heart, mind, and soul, you really are a creator, not a victim, Sophia said. As I said before, I spent the first few months after I met Ted just making that choice every day, sensing more and more what it meant to live as a creator. It took me some time to clarify what I wanted to create in my life. At first, all I knew was that I couldn't live as a victim anymore. It took a while for me to learn exactly how I could step out of the victim stance and into the creator orientation. Out on the water, a surfer caught a wave and rode along as the wave crested and gradually subsided.
It sounds almost too good to be true, I said. I mean, living my life from a creator orientation is bound to be a wonderful change compared to what I've grown used to.
Sophia smiled and pointed out toward the surfer. Living your life from a creator perspective is kind of like what that guy's doing, like riding a wave. There will still be waves of change in your life, and you'll have to learn to ride them. Some of the changes will arise from your own choices, and others from circumstances beyond your control. Sometimes the waves will throw you for a loop, and other times you'll surf them with skill, ease, and grace. Even when the waves throw you, you will learn from the experience and continue growing, like a surfer whose close attention and focus can make his ride on a wave into a powerful experience of beauty and grace. By living into the creator orientation and the empowerment dynamic, in time, you'll learn to navigate through life so adeptly that sometimes you'll amaze even yourself.
I watched the surfer ride the wave all the way into shore. He shouted with glee, shoving his fist in the air.
Yes!
And headed back into the waves.
You'll learn to love, or at least learn to ride, the variety of waves that life serves up, Sophia added. You'll find yourself actually moving toward each new challenge with growing enthusiasm. Greeting your experiences as a creator is a powerful way to live.
A creator has a special relationship with power, said Ted. The kind of power that a creator cultivates is not power over others. That is the power of the persecutor. Instead, a creator harnesses the power to create. Power to and power with are the dynamic duo of the creator orientation. Creators share power with others, first and foremost, because they see others as creators in their own right. Truly speaking, a creator is actually a co-creator, as he or she gives in service to others while at the same time receiving support from them. Creators also receive support in ways that might seem mysterious, from unseen forces which appear to be spiritual in nature. The experiences of serendipity and synchronicity that Sophia referred to are manifestations of the unseen, but very present co-creator in action. As a creator enters into relationship with other creators, together,
They support other people by playing the two additional roles that complete the empowerment dynamic, challenger and coach. The challenger role. The challenger has many faces, Ted continued. The most common is the one who provokes others to take action. The challenger may be compassionate or confrontational, or both. A challenger calls forth a creator's will to create, often spurring him or her to learn new skills, make difficult decisions, or do whatever is necessary to manifest a dream or desire. The challenger is a kind of teacher who points toward life's lessons, toward opportunities for growth embedded in the living of life. Like the relationship of persecutor to victim, the challenger to a creator is usually a person, but it may also be a condition or circumstance. All of life's experiences are teachers in some sense, challenging us to grow and evolve. Although the persecutor certainly provokes a reaction, the challenger elicits a response by encouraging a creator to acquire new knowledge, skill, or insight. Both roles initiate change, but in different ways. Ted bent over and scratched CH in the sand at one corner of the triangle. Sophia said,
I once worked for a manager who was one of the most difficult people I ever knew. She pushed all of my emotional buttons. But as I look back on the experience of working with her, I realize how much I learned. I learned how to not treat others, for one thing. Being in that situation also forced me to clarify the work I really wanted to do, and to learn to stay centered in the face of what I could have easily called one tough persecutor.
Ted smiled. I remember, Sophia, how you were struggling with your manager at that time. The challengers who come into your life, David, may be either constructive or deconstructive in nature. Constructive challengers spark improvement or development of some kind. They coax, cajole, and entice you to move in the directions of your heart's desires. This kind of challenger is a teacher who challenges your pet notions, your view of the status quo. Most of the time, constructive challengers are aware of what they are doing when they challenge you. They see you as a creator, and they encourage your learning, growth, and development. Deconstructive challengers, on the other hand, cause you to take apart your experience in order to learn from it. These teachers may be unwelcome people, conditions, or circumstances, such as a relationship that teaches you to face something difficult in yourself, especially something that is inhibiting your capacity to create. Sophia's manager was one of those for her. A deconstructive challenger might be an event that wakes you up to possibilities or to problems for which you can discover a creative solution. Even this kind of challenger bestows a great gift, although it rarely feels that way. The gift is usually one of clarity, showing you what you want or don't want, what you need to leave behind, or what you must learn so you don't repeat a painful experience. Sophia turned to me with compassion in her eyes, and I felt the question coming. Who or what have been your challengers, David? I sifted through my woes for a moment. My dad's death, my infertility, my ex-wife's emotional withdrawal. All were challengers, without a doubt. When my dad passed away, it challenged me to develop my sense of myself as an adult. I was thinking out loud. He used to challenge me to consider the impact I was making. He taught me to always ask myself whether I was leaving other people or situations better off than I found them. That was his personal measure of success. And when he died, I adopted that measure within myself more completely. I can see the example he set for me and how his death was a constructive challenger in my life. My infertility is a little trickier, though. It certainly has been a deconstructive challenger. Made me take stock of a lot of things, especially how I see my contribution in the world. Not being able to father my own children is a deep loss, but I also know there are plenty of opportunities to father children in the role of stepfather or adoptive parent, or to volunteer with a community service organization as a mentor to young people. Lately, I've also realized that my larger contribution may have more to do with what I offer through my work. My ex-wife was also a deconstructive challenger. Her withdrawal from our marriage, which I can now see with a bit more compassion, made me think about what I really wanted in a relationship. I know that I want a healthy relationship, but I'm not entirely sure what that looks like. I have so much to learn and explore before I'm ready to open up to a new intimate relationship. Sophia smiled kindly. David,
you're already doing the work of a creator. To be able to look on those experiences in which you've seen yourself as a victim, to see them now as challengers that have taught you something, that's one giant step. It's one of the major shifts in awareness that TED brings. Already, you're transforming your relationship to your life experiences.
Seeing that you have much to learn and to explore brings us to the third role in the empowerment dynamic, the coach, remarked TED. The coach role.
As he wrote CO in the lower right corner of his sand drawing, TED asked,
"What comes to mind when you think about a coach, David?"
"I think of sports. Maybe a football coach or a basketball coach," I said.
The role of coach in the empowerment dynamic is a bit different. In the sports world, a coach doesn't actively engage in the field of play. The coach is on the sidelines, strategizing and helping to coordinate the individual efforts of the team members with the goal of winning the game. A good sports coach helps his or her players believe they can win, or at least play their best, by guiding them to develop the skills and attitudes that lead to success. A coach in the empowerment dynamic shares that characteristic of encouragement with a sports coach. But there is at least one key difference between a typical sports coach and a coach in the empowerment dynamic. A TED coach is fully engaged in the field of play, the creator orientation, in his or her own life. First and foremost, a coach knows he or she is a creator and sees other people as creators as well. The coach is the antidote to the victim's rescuer in the DDT. While both coach and rescuer seek to support the other person, the victim or creator, the rescuer actually draws power away from the victim and reinforces his or her powerlessness. A coach leaves the power with the creator and seeks only to help facilitate her personal progress. A coach is the embodiment of a creator's desire to share power with another. Sophia looked at Ted and playfully signaled timeout.
"Hang on, coach. David, let me share some of my experience in working with several different types of coaches. I've been blessed to have a number of great coaches, including this guy here."
Sophia and Ted caught each other's eyes and chuckled. Their lightness lifted my spirits. "When Dan and I were first breaking up, I worked with a dynamite therapist and licensed social worker. She asked a lot of good questions that helped me probe into my past so I could begin to understand the sources of some of the patterns of behavior that had contributed to our relationship's breakdown. Then she helped me begin to release them and replace the old behaviors with more functional ways of being in relationships. I was working with her when I first met Ted. Just as he is sharing with you, he helped me open to a whole different way of thinking and to see that I could create a future that was not bound by my past. As a result of my conversations with Ted, I decided to begin working with a certified coach who helped me clarify what I wanted and to develop strategies for creating outcomes. All three, the therapist, Ted, and the certified coach, acted as coaches for me because they supported my own exploration."
Ted added, "A coach in the empowerment dynamic doesn't necessarily need to be professionally trained, such as the therapist and professional coach Sophia worked with. A coach can simply be a trusted friend, which I know I have been for Sophia. It is true, however, that there are times when it may be important to work with a professional. A coach supports, assists, and facilitates a creator in manifesting a desired outcome. A coach holds others to be whole, resourceful, and creative. Coaches don't regard those who turn to them for support as somehow broken or in need of fixing, which is the rescuer's viewpoint. Instead, a coach helps others see new possibilities, helps them dare to dream."
"That's right," Sophia chimed in. "A coach is a source of knowledge, but he doesn't tell a creator what she should or shouldn't do. Instead, he asks a lot of good questions and listens deeply to what a creator is saying as she thinks, probes, and explores. A coach is constantly alert to a possibility. My coaches are able to see possibilities that may be invisible to me. They help ignite my inspiration, and they're committed to my success as I forge my own way in life. They say, 'I'm going to stand beside you no matter what,' and they mean it. What they don't say, though, is, 'Here, let me fix it for you,' or, even more importantly, 'Let me fix you,' which is the approach of the rescuer. When I began working with a professional coach, he shared the definition of a coach from the International Coach Federation."
Sophia opened her journal again, found the page she was looking for, and handed it to me. I read the definition she had written. Professional coaches provide an ongoing partnership designed to help clients produce fulfilling results in their personal and professional lives. Coaches help people improve their performances and enhance the quality of their lives. Coaches are trained to listen, to observe, and to customize their approach to individual client needs. They seek to elicit solutions and strategies from the client. They believe the client is naturally creative and resourceful. The coach's job is to provide support to enhance the skills, resources, and creativity that the client already has. "Having that kind of support must be awesome," I said. "I've worked with a therapist before. That's how I found out about Cartman's drama triangle. And I can see how she acted as a coach of sorts and the way she helped me explore. But if you are not professionally trained, how does a coach go about working with a creator?" Sophia reached over and pulled the exercise band out of Ted's pocket. She stretched it between her two hands, the way I had done earlier. "One really effective way is to use dynamic tension. You can be a coach for others by asking them questions that help them gain clarity about what they want to create in life. Help them assess their current reality, both what is helpful in creating their vision and what is inhibiting and getting in the way. Then explore with them possible baby steps they can commit to. That will begin to bring their heart's desires into reality. The main thing is to remember to see the other as a creator, to be curious and ask good questions to help